I'm grateful for this opportunity to describe the work that I've been doing with John Lyle and Cornelius Namoluco, two people who work for me. This is a bit of a speculative paper, I suppose, and I'm grateful to the program committee and the reviewers for letting me talk about it. You might see it as a position paper. Perhaps it would be more accurate to describe as a work in progress. Either way, it's a bit of a change of pace from the other papers we've had this morning. There are no lines of code in my presentation. I guess my perspective on provenance and security is a systems one. I'm interested in how we put things together. We've got tools for doing a variety of things in security and provenance. How do we use them together to build something that's of use to us? In my top arc, in my picture there, security leads to provenance. The security of provenance is clearly crucial. I'll mention that on the next slide, but then discard it because it's not my scope today. The bottom arc, on the other hand, is probably obvious to many people who study provenance. Perhaps not so obvious to people who study security sometimes, but the way in which provenance helps us to build the security that we need in a system. I want to make that a little more precise and maybe bring some of the security terminology into the world of provenance in order to do that. That's not an unexplored topic, and in a sense, some of the other talks that we've heard this morning already are in some sense inhabiting my bottom arc there. But I'm interested in a general framework in how we think about provenance giving rise to security, or how security can be controlled through provenance. I know that provenance has lots of other uses, but I don't care about those. So many of the papers, if you pick up papers on provenance and security, many of them are discussing the security of provenance, how we achieve provenance that has some kind of inherent integrity, perhaps, how we know that the provenance data we're relying on is accurate. And many of these things interest me, things like trusted computing, how we can use something like TPM to give rise to more accurate provenance information. But they don't interest me today, so I'm not going to talk about digital signatures or instrumenting code or anything like that. But these are all obviously important things. What I'm interested in is looking at things from the other perspective. So I'm interested in the classical notion of security, if you like, confidentiality, integrity, availability, those things. We could sum up the reason why we invest effort in those things as, of course, being something about stopping bad things from happening. But sometimes stopping them is too hard, and so promoting good behavior in our users and our external parties and people who might interact with our system in some way is sometimes more practical. And the way that we achieve that is through this idea of security controls, whether they're all about prevention, whether they're about detection and correction of things that shouldn't have happened, and whether those are achieved through highly technical means or through administrative means or through physical machines. Locking my computer in a safe is always very constructive for security, but not very good for other characteristics. The different controls, of course, are useful for different aspects of security. And my particular perspective is the extent to which provenance has a role to play in this context. Sitting alongside cryptography, guns, walls, hiring policies, reference monitors, TPMs, worm drives, a variety of other means by which we might achieve those kinds of security. And of course, in order to select a security control in the context of engineering a system, we need to think about the context. We need to think about the threats that might arise in our system. And that's generally summed up in the idea of a risk model. which is in a sense a cost-benefit analysis, the means of working out what is likely to go wrong, how likely it is to go wrong, and what the impact will be if it does. And so if I'm going to select provenance as a security control, I need to do some kind of risk-based decision around my selection. Perhaps that's obvious. Provenance people will say that provenance delivers on security. But how do we do it in practice? We can choose a whole variety of approaches to provenance from the literature. Which ones will help us achieve our goal in context? It really depends on that idea of risk, that idea of the product of the impact and the likelihood of a bad event. And that's quite a pragmatic approach. It's not the all or nothing approach that often characterizes a sort of computer science approach to search problems. It's not about choosing a technology that I want to research and then finding a security story that makes it a worthwhile research project, but rather turning that on its head and saying, what do I really need to achieve? And of course, people in the security world talk about managing risk either through reducing the likelihood of the harm occurring or reducing the impact of that harmful event. The big problem in doing this is that I'm something of a skeptic around risk, because although it gives us a very good language, and clearly in doing security design, exactly what we want to do is reduce the likelihood and reduce the impact, nobody really knows the numbers. For any realistic system, those likelihood and impact numbers are generally made up. So the extent to which we can do risk analysis is perhaps doubtful, but it does give us a good framework for thinking about the kind of provenance that we need. And of course, in that context, the question of the security of our provenance makes sense. The question of whether the logs that I generate are tamper-proof makes sense. The question of whether the software that gave rise to the entry in the provenance graph is itself tainted makes sense. But that is the context in which I get to choose whether those are good provenance controls or not. Provenance as a security control then seems to me of interest, because a lot of the security controls we talk about are of the preventative kind. We might call them synchronous. The decision about whether I can access a file or not is typically made in real time by some reference monitor. But there's a huge role for checking security after the fact, whether it's these aspects of audit and forensics, whether it's access control that's based not on preventing me from accessing some person's information, but the fact that I will get fired if I access that information when I shouldn't. Whether it's to do with resolving some dispute about a service level agreement or whether someone's performed their contractual role correctly, and so on. Whether it's to do with checking data integrity or provenance, if you will, at the point of use rather than at the point at which it's generated. I guess there are a lot of scientific contexts where we may invest a lot of money in our cloud or our grid computing solution, run a lot of jobs, and then actually, for some reason, never actually analyze the output very much. There will be a lot of cases when data gets generated but is never looked at again. So there are good reasons in some security contexts where I'd much rather just check at the point when I'm going to use that data whether it is indeed accurate, whether its provenance is suitable for my task. I guess that's a kind of lazy evaluation. And that's related, I suppose, to assuring the result of my activity instead of the process. Whether I care what the workflow was or merely that it delivered the form of result that I wanted, whether I care how my bill arose or just the fact that it's got the right amount on it. But this live In contrast to live decision making, this is quite a nice, pragmatic approach that I can do at my leisure in the time that suits me. Whereas live decision making is necessarily brittle. It has to be pessimistic. It has to assume that if I give the wrong data to the wrong person at the wrong time, the sky will fall. But in fact, in most contexts, most of the time, the bad security events are the rare ones. Most people are good. Most people tend to do the right thing. Perhaps they're only kept honest by the fact that there is some kind of audit, some kind of log, some kind of provenance that checks their behavior. But the fact is, we're looking for rare events, not everyday events. And so investing a lot of effort in preventing those rare events isn't necessarily cost effective compared to detecting when they've happened. The brittle approach has to be used in some cases, of course, because once a secret is disclosed, it can't be undisclosed. And I suppose the punchline then for thinking about provenance as a security control is that we do need to review an architecture as a whole, a system design as a whole. The context matters immensely. So it always astonishes me that email is used sometimes in courts of law to establish what happened in a particular transaction, in a particular context, because we all know that that could be entirely made up. And yet the provenance that comes with email is often the headers and the route that it took and the dates when emails were written and the inclusion of other elements in the message is often good enough to establish it as a good piece of evidence in surprisingly high stakes contexts. And we could ask why that is, and perhaps to do with the likelihood that someone could have tampered with all the logs, all the relevant server logs and so on, maybe means that the email is likely to be the one that is now being presented to the court. And so in thinking about this kind of provenance in a system as a whole, we get to embrace the heterogeneity, the uncertainty, the imperfections of our provenance collection, as well as lots of other information about the system, like its architecture, like the ontology of the data that I'm operating with, like the policies, the high-level policies that surround what I'm doing, not merely the very detailed ones that my operating system relies on. But we have to hold that in tension with the problem that if we connect too much provenance, we may in ourselves create our own information security risk. In particular, collecting lots of information about who did what gives rise to a lot of privacy concerns. In Europe, we've got ever-increasing legislation that covers what you may do with data that relates to individuals. In the US, you've got similar, perhaps more fragmentary, but sometimes stronger concerns in the same way. And many jurisdictions care very much about who holds data on individuals and what they do with it. And the more provenance information we've got about who did what when, the more likely we are at some point to transgress. So not collecting that data can be very desirable. And likewise, we've got side channel issues. The provenance data may itself tell me a whole lot about the actual data, the data to which it pertains, and the secrets of that data may be disclosed through the provenance information. So we have to put that whole thing in this risk-based context. Is it more valuable to have the personal information because I can make useful derivations based upon it, or is it best to throw it away lest I inadvertently disclose it when I shouldn't? And that can only be answered in context, and it's a difficult question. All of which is the motivation for the project that I'm working on, which is why I say this is, in a sense, work in progress, a project we've got called Trust Domains, which is trying to think about how to support collaborative working and information sharing. Suppose I want to form a consortium to work on some project. How do I decide how we share data in that context, in our group, perhaps a group of companies, a group of individuals. How do we decide how to form the collaboration, how we decide what to do when it breaks apart, how we manage our interactions during that collaboration. How do we ensure the integrity and the provenance of information? How, when the collaboration breaks apart, how do I know whether you still have a copy of some particular confidential piece of data of mine, or perhaps I can know that you never had a copy of that particular piece of data? And we're calling that a trust domain. We're driven by a number of case studies in this context. We're thinking about the kind of scientific collaboration that I know has driven a lot of work in provenance around workflows and databases of scientific data, processing in clouds and grid contexts and this type of thing. One of our project partners is very interested in conference management and the fact that those people who run something like the EasyChair database actually know just about everything about every paper you've written and what the reviewers thought of it, and whether you're a good reviewer or a bad reviewer, whether you review on time, and a whole bunch of other really rather personal information that you might prefer your tenure committee not to know. Or if we're forming a very rapid collaboration to cope with something like the Haiti earthquake, we've got thousands of organizations suddenly trying to share data. We're never going to have a completely heterogeneous, well-managed solution in which they can do that. And yet somehow the Red Cross and the US Navy and 1,000 minor small-scale charities all need to share information, and some of it quite sensitive, some of it quite needing to be timely, some of it with quite a high degree of confidentiality, some of it with real integrity concerns. And mergers and acquisitions is another. I think I'm running out of time. So in those contexts, we've got heterogeneity, we've got a lack of centralized control, we've got entities who basically want to cooperate, who are basically on the same page. They're not true adversaries somehow, and yet we do need to be aware that there's an insider threat, and most big security problems arise from insiders. We get to use virtual machines, and that can help with collecting some provenance data. We're trying to make use of things like cloud computing, trusted computing and clouds and this type of thing. And crucially, we want to make decisions based on evidence, and I suppose that's where this idea of provenance comes in. So we've begun to make a model of what it might be to inhabit one of these domains, thinking about the fact that actions give rise to... actions act on assets, they're controlled by controls, or monitored by controls, And those produce evidence. The more elaborate version of that diagram has evidence, or a subtype of evidence being provenance, and that's roughly where we're at. So we're thinking about how to interoperate in those contexts. A variety of concerns, which I won't go into, but one of them clearly is how we manage that evidence, how we decide whether to trust one another. And we've got this architecture model that I won't go into for lack of time, but in a few hours' time, my colleague Cornelius is to present a paper in Vienna where we've got an open provenance model, OPM model, of this approach to provenance in our trust domains. And I refer you to the paper. So the conclusion, I suppose, is that I'm thinking about how to design mutually trusting distributed systems, perhaps with legacy components, perhaps with some strong technical provenance and trust evidence, a variety of things like contracts on the one hand and TPMs on the other, and everything in between. The risk-based approach seems the right way to handle this, in order to collect and analyze the provenance, with this rather straightforward observation that some is usually better than none, but perhaps not always. It really depends on the context. And the rigor for that process depends on how much you trust risk-based analysis, but I'm not sure we've got much of an alternative. And that framework, that language that the world of security and risk gives us, seems to me a good way to, a good set of concepts to transplant into the world of provenance and think about how to use provenance to design the kind of collaborating systems that I'm interested in trust domains. And I think that's 20 minutes, so thank you. I think at our end of the project, it's mainly based on case studies, but we do have partners in the project who are looking at economic models. So I suppose one validation is which one costs the more or entails the more financial risk.
I think that's also
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you were trying to evaluate different models of provenance based on risk, or is there some fixed model of provenance that you can work with?
I think we've got and are developing a model of provenance, yeah. And that will probably be the one around which we try and unify our idea of evidence coming from many different places. Yeah.